Sarah, there's made up really of three sections, very easy to discern. The first one is Kinyan Marat HaMachpelah, which is occasioned by the death of Sarah. The last one is sort of a closing up of the biography of Abraham and Ishmael. And the middle part, which is the main part of the Parsha, central and most text, is the story of the slave going to find a wife for Yitzchak. Very famous story. And truth is that we have 25 minutes or however long it is, and a huge perek. So what I'd like to do is, instead of like addressing one particular issue and focusing on any michut ve'ad srochnal or the akedah, I just start reading through the story and here and there point out a few things. We'll see how far we get. So we'll learn some text together. Ve'avraham zaken ba'bayamim. All right, now that phrase, and by the way, we typically, because we're so used to the story, and it's the same problem we have all the time, since we're so used to the story, we kind of assume we know what's going on. Not so simple. And 2 years ago, we talked about how this looked from Rivka's perspective. And I'll remind you of that in here a little later. But that what Rivka seemed to be seeing was a wealthy man who was coming to marry her, not a slave. Right? And perhaps she felt duped by that. In any case, but even this introductory line carries so much weight to it, but we zip through it because we want to get to the main story. Avraham zaken ba bayamim. What does that phrase mean?
Maybe his days of death are coming.
So that's it. Ba bayamim really means the end is nigh. Now, the end is nigh is possibly an objective statement, which you could only say after he dies, say, well, he was within the last X amount of time before his death, or it can be a subjective statement, meaning he felt like he was going to die. We have such a phenomenon at least once, if not twice more, in just Breishit, of people who are old, think they're going to die, but aren't necessarily about to die. The most famous, of course, is Yitzchak. When he thinks he's going to die, it turns out he lives much, much longer than that, but he thinks he's going to die, and therefore he tells Esav to go hunt, etc., etc. That leads to the whole masquerade thing that leads to Yaakov fleeing. It's possible also that Yaakov, when he calls Yosef to his deathbed, it's not his deathbed. It's very possible that that happens a while earlier, and only later is the whole scene with Menashe and Ephraim and the brachot, which then seems to move towards the deathbed scene. So there are people, and we're going to go back to that scene with Yaakov and Yosef a little bit later, because there's something curious that happens here and is only repeated there. But at least from Avram's perspective, he's Baba Yamim. That's the critical part. V'adonai berachat Avraham bakol. All right, so if you think about it, I mean, it sounds like kind of a nice little setup. Avram is blessed with everything. And you think about it, there's only one thing left for him to do in his life, to wrap things up. He wants to put his affairs in order. So he's got land. He's got Ishmael, who's gone off and made a success of that himself. We're going to find out later that he ends up having a bunch more kids and gives them stuff and sends them off. He's taking care of Sarah. She's buried. So what's left to do is find a wife for Yitzchak. So, by the way, why does Avram have to find a wife for Yitzchak? Who found a wife for Avram? So we don't know, but it looks like Avram got married on his own.
Before he went to Canaan.
Yeah, yeah, but Avram married Sarai. How about Yaakov? What does Yaakov find his own wives? He's directed, but he does his own activity. Yitzchak seems to not be in that parsha, and Avram takes the responsibility to make sure to get a wife for Yitzchak. Unclear why. I'll suggest something later on, if time permitting. But that's where it seems to go. But why this introduction of Avraham Zaken? And the question is, V'adonai berachat Avraham bakol, is that a conclusion from Zaken ba'bayamim? Meaning, he's come in his days, and the result of that is he's been blessed. Is it just two separate statements? Two statements. One is he's very old. He's rounding third base, coming home. And on the other hand, he's also blessed by God. And it all depends on one letter in this pasuk and how we interpret it. And that letter is the Vav. Vav has a lot of possible meanings. Vav can work grammatically to change the future tense to the past. Remember familiar Vav Vaipuch? Vav typically is a conjunction and, but sometimes it's or and sometimes it's but. Sometimes it is translated as that is to say. We call it Vava Biur, which introduces an explication of an earlier statement. What does it mean here? It could be but. meaning even though Abraham is old and about to die, nonetheless, he's still blessed with everything.
You mean the second one, not the first one?
The one that at the Anachta. Adonai Barachat Abraham Bakol. Right.
Right, okay.
Right. So, unclear, but let's see. Vayom Abraham Elavdo Zakan Beto. So, who does he speak to? Avdo Zakan Beto. What does that mean? Does he only have one slave? He doesn't, because this slave takes a few other men with him who seem to be servants in the house. Right? So it should be his oldest slave. But let's think about whether Zakan Beto really should be translated as eldest. Alright? What's he going to ask the slave to do? To take a long trip. A trip which is about 550 miles. My guys did it on Google Maps. And from Hebron to Haran, if you go straight, walking, they tried the driving thing, it didn't give any results. But by walking, it's 550 miles. So that's over 1,000 miles round trip. So does it make sense to ask an old slave? So what does Zakan Beto mean? Now, what does the word Zakain mean in Torah?
Wise.
It could mean wise, although I'm not sure where. It seems to be a leader. Right? It seems to be among the... So therefore, Zakan Beto would mean sort of the chief steward in the house, or the chief slave in the house. Not necessarily an old guy. And we'll see that he's probably not an old guy because of what he asked him to do. HaMoshel b'chol ha'shelo. And now we're given a definition. What is Avdo Zakan Beto? HaMoshel b'chol ha'shelo, which means he's a CFO. He's the guy who's in charge of the state. Simna yadcha tachet yurechi. What does Avram ask him to do? What was he asking to do?
Well,
put your hand under my thigh. Which I think is a bizarre kind of statement. Right? So let's come back to it. Let's see what actually happens when he does that. And then there's a parallel. He says, I'm going to make you take an oath. I'm really going to administer an oath. And that oath is going to be by the name of Hashem, who is the God of heaven and the God of earth. Now, why does he have to say that? So it's possible that that's how they took an oath. What other oaths are we familiar with earlier on in Bereishit? And we talked about it 2 weeks ago. When Avraham talks to Melech Sodom, what does he say? Harimoti adi el Adonai el Elyon konei shamayim v'aretz. So again, the fact that God is the one who created heaven and earth seems to be a part of taking this oath. Maybe it's because if you lie under this oath, God's going to get you, and he can get you anywhere because he created everything. Maybe. And maybe that's just the formula. But he says this formula, and what's the oath? That you do not take a wife for my son Yitzchak from among the Kanani among whom I live. Okay. So let's roll back first to the hand under the thigh. Then, and couple that with the fact that there's an oath, and then let's try to figure out why he's making this oath. Why the whole insistence on not marrying a Kanani girl? Why does he put his hand under his thigh? Where else do we see this activity, this behavior? Put your hand under my thigh and take an oath. Yaakov, at the beginning of Vayechi, which may or may not be right before he died, when he summons Yosef. And he says to Yosef, and make an oath that you will not bury me in Mitzrayim, but rather you will bury me back in Canaan. So you see, by the way, both of these things have to do with location, right? And they're sort of inverted. One of them is, don't bury me here, bury me back in Canaan. This is, don't take a Canaanite girl, take a girl from Haran. Okay? But what's with the thigh? Put your hand under the thigh.
Is that related?
What?
Gita and Asha is related?
It don't seem to be. It's not in the same part of the body. So
with Yaakov, there was a concern that Paro would want him to not permit him to go.
Right. So Chazal and Masachat Sota pick up on this, and this actually fits very well. They say, why did Yaakov administer it as an oath? So that when Yosef comes and says, I have to bury my father in Canaan, Paro would say, because And Chazal were familiar with the cult of the dead and the fact that Egypt had a large cult of the dead. And here, this important man who's the king's father, the viceroy's father, dies. We want to hold on to them. So the oath gave Yosef the leverage to actually take him out of the country. But why the five? So in the ancient Near East, very serious oaths of this nature were introduced or done with the one committing putting his hands underneath the one to whom he's committing. And the symbolism of it was, I am totally relying on you. Kind of like, if you remember, trust falls. Remember those we do in camp? You'd stand there, and somebody'd stand back of you, and you'd fall straight backwards and trust the world. It's a trust fall. I'm totally relying on you. Why is that? Because in the case of Yaakov, Yaakov can't make sure that he gets buried in Canaan because he's going to be dead at the time. That's kind of what burial is. All right, so now roll that back. Why does Avram say to his slave, put your hand under my thigh and take an oath that you won't have a Canaanite girl marry Yitzchak? Because what does he think will happen? By the time this slave comes back from his chippus, I'm going to be dead. And I can't control it anymore. So I'm making this a super serious oath that carries with it the weight of what we would call mitzvah machmat mitah, a deathbed wish. Now, I mean, that's why the first pasuk is so important. Because Avraham Zaken Ba Bayamim is, by the way, not an objectively accurate statement. Let's just do the numbers. How old is Avraham when Yitzchak is born? Easy, even 100. Makes it easy. How old is Yitzchak when he gets married? An even 40. Which means Avraham is 140 when he gets married, which means a little less than 140 at this point. Call it 139. How old is Avraham when he dies? 175. Which means this is a good 35, 36, or 37 years before Avram dies, but Avram doesn't know that. And so Avram thinks he's going to die, and so therefore he says, I can't make this journey, I'm too old. And when you come back, I may be dead, and you may come back with nobody and say, okay, I'll find a local girl for Yitzchak, or you may come back and say, she'll marry, but Yitzchak's got to go there. Or one of the other things I don't want to have happen, so we're doing the thigh thing. And that raises the level, the kind of ramps up the level of the oath. Okay. Yeah.
Did Zaken Ba Bayamim mean he's wiser than his days?
Don't think so. And again, the word Zaken doesn't mean wise.
Okay.
Right?
Whatever you want to call it. Because you have Zaken.
No, Zaken Beto is a noun. Zaken is an adjective.
Okay.
Right? As an adjective, it means old. Right, a zaken as a noun refers typically to the elders, as in the leadership, and it could be a very young person still be a zaken. The famous story with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, why his zakan goes gray so he can sort of fit there, or
so
white.
How are you resolving the fact that he's not so old? The Baba Yamim is not really,
because Baba Yamim is a subjective statement. He thinks that this is the end, and that's why he does this.
Oh, okay.
Right? Yeah.
I get the impression that there's no urgency in Abraham's message to the servant, and that it's almost like he's thinking that, well, you're going to take the son, you're going to find a wife after I die.
Okay, even better.
Because right. Otherwise, why would he worry about him marrying a Canaanite girl if he was sending him off? I mean, it's just a question. He's not no longer around.
So in other words, this is my deathbed wish. I want you to make sure that you make sure Yitzchak doesn't marry a local girl. And the surprise here is really twofold. One surprise is on the part of the Eved, who turns out to be way better than we thought, because we generally don't have a high opinion of Avadim. Turns out to be way sharper, better negotiator, better representative than we thought. And what's surprising is he actually picks up and leaves right away. Right? Right, and the second thing is, the question is, but why does he not want a Canaanite wife for Yitzchak? So the easy answer is to say, because the Canaanim are all terrible, disgusting people, and have terrible morals, and it's a lot better to get somebody from Lavan's family. Yeah, that worked very well. So I think that there's something else, because if you look at the words that Avraham uses, he doesn't say anything inherently negative about the Canaanim. And by the way, Avraham had treaties with the Canaanim. Avraham bought land among the Canaanim. Avram had Canaanite treaty partners at war, on Erish Kol and Mamre. Avraham sits down for a detente with Canaanite kings and priests. So it's not like the Canaanim are an abhorrence to Avraham, at least not the Canaanim of Avraham's time. Maybe by the time we come back from Yitziat Mitzrayim, maybe they're a whole different breed. But right now, that's not the problem. Look at the wording. Mibnot ha-Kanani asher anochi yoshev bikirbo. What is it he wants to avoid? Yitzchak marrying a local girl. Now, why would that be? Why would that be? Why does he want to avoid Yitzchak marrying a local girl? So that, we have to double back to our question about why is it that Yitzchak's not finding his own wife? So let's roll all the way back to the most momentous moment in the joint life of Avram and Yitzchak. You can argue that there are other momentous moments in Yitzchak's life, although I don't think so. You can argue there are more momentous moments in Avram's life, although I don't think so. But there is no moment bigger in their joint life together than the Akedah. The Akedah is the last time God ever talks to Avram. The Akedah, after the Akedah, we don't see Avram and Sarah together anymore. The next thing we hear about, she's dead. But the Akedah is also the last time we ever see Avram and Yitzchak together. And when Avram goes back, the simple read of the text, although there is a way to read this differently, the simple read of the text is that Avram comes back to his two lads, they go to Beersheba, and Yitzchak's not around. But it is clear that Yitzchak is not around, at least he's not mentioned at all, in the context of Kinyan Marat HaMachpelah. And the simple evidence of it is that Avram is sending his slave from Hebron, but when the slave comes back, where does he come back to? He comes back to Beersheba. How does the slave refer to himself throughout this story when he talks about himself? He says, Eved Avraham Anochi. I'm the slave of Avraham. And yet when he comes back with Rivka, and Rivka sees Yitzchak wandering around, she says, Mi Ha'ish, what does he say? He doesn't say, Hu Ben Adoni. He says, Hu Adoni. Which seems to me that part of this mission was that Avram is sending the slave, the slave's going to find a wife, bring the wife back, and then the slave is going to become the slave of Yitzchak. Now, where has Yitzchak been? Yitzchak's been somewhere out in the desert near Beersheba. What's he doing? See, we have a little bit of a record of what Avram's doing. Avram's creating treaties, Avram's going to war, Avram's building mizbachot, Avram's interacting with all sorts of people. What's Yitzchak doing? Now, Yitzchak's 40 at this time. We don't know how old he was at the Akedah. The assessments range from anywhere from 5 or 6. Rav Avram ben Oshel Rambam, 13, the Ibn Ezra, 26, Seder Olam, 37, another version of Seder Olam. But there is some sort of gap. What's Yitzchak been doing, and why is he around Beersheba? So the simple read of it, and the Midrashim go to town on this, is that Yitzchak went and lived a life of seclusion, meditation, something of that sort. Yitzchak is the introvert, and that's fairly clear from everything else we read about him in the text. There's Midrashim that Yitzchak went to Yeshiva Shoshem Va'eber. There's Midrashim that Avram actually killed Yitzchak, and he went to Olam Haba, and then he had Tchiyat HaMetim, and he came back. There's all sorts of wild Midrashim there about where Yitzchak was. It was clear he's not around. And it seems that Yitzchak is sort of an otherworldly kind of person, and as a result of that, him going to find a wife, akin to Avram adopting his niece, and akin to Yaakov traveling and meeting a girl at the well, etc., and even Moshe going and being a savior to some girls and then marrying one of them, it's just not going to happen with Yitzchak. So Avram has to step in and say, I need to push this further on my own. But I'm old, and he's there, and I'm here. So I'm entrusting my trustee, my executor, to take care of this, and this is how I'm doing it. Okay, now why not a Canaanite girl? So there's a simple explanation and a deeper explanation that I think works together. He marries Rivka. Where's Rivka's family?
Outside.
Far away, which means Yitzchak and Rivka are on their own. And they can set out on their own. Sarah's dead. As far as Avram's concerned, he's going to be dead. And now Rivka's parents are as good as dead, they're that far away. So Yitzchak and Rivka are on their own. Which is what model? The model of Avram and Sarah. Avram and Sarah live their life away from the family. So it's as if he's copying and imitating that piece. But there's yet another piece of the puzzle, because if he marries a Kanani girl, then the in-laws are right down the block. Which means that we're not following that model. But there's yet a deeper issue. Up until the time that Avraham bought Marat HaMachpelah, Avraham was an outsider. How does he introduce himself at the beginning of the shir? At the beginning of the parsha, how does he introduce himself? Ger v'toshav anochi machem. I'm an outsider. I live here, but I'm an outsider. Please give me a kever. And they say, you are a princely, godly man, and everybody would be honored to have him. He said, no, that's not good enough. I want to buy in. And he pays an exorbitant price to buy in, but the result of that is he's now a regular citizen, because in Chiti law, you're only allowed to own land if you're a citizen, which is very likely what the 400 shekel were, was actually what we might call an adult adoption. We have records of this from the ancient world, where he was buying his way in to become a member of the tribe so that he could get land. Very nice. Now he owns land in Eretz Yisrael. Very good, but now we got a problem. Jackie Mason has a line, had a line, whatever, where he said, this goes back to an earlier generation, no Jew will ever own a Mercedes until I can afford one. Jews typically, and you think about right here in L.A., L.A. Country Club, why was it built? Why was Hillcrest built? Because L.A. Country Club wouldn't allow Jews, it was restricted. I will have nothing to do with those going, because they'll have nothing to do with me. Kol zman that we're an outsider, our identity, even if we're not necessarily connected religiously, our identity is very strong. The biggest threat to Jewish particularism is the open door. And we've seen it. We've seen it right in front of us in America. It doesn't mean that the open door is a bad thing, but the typical Jewish reaction to the open door is a bad thing. The Netziv is a phenomenal comment in its commentary on the Haggadah, the line that we're all familiar with, V'hisha Amda Labotinu V'lanu, etc. So, the V'hisha Amda is a comment on Brit Ben HaMatarim, which we read 2 weeks ago. Yadoa Tedaki Yer Yezar Chaver Solahem, right? Your kids are going to be strangers in a strange land. They're going to be worked very hard, etc. And I'll judge the nation that oppresses them. Very good. So we all assume that V'hisha Amda Labotinu V'lanu is that in every generation, God redeems us. In other words, that what God promised he would do, he continues to do. And even though we're oppressed, he saves us. And he says, no, that's not what Vishamda means. Vishamda is, Ger Yezar Achav Eretz Lo Lahem, that wherever we go, we're always strangers. That's the Haftacha, that we'll never feel at home. And as long as we don't feel at home, we connect with each other and we connect religiously and we connect to our past. Now, it's a somewhat sad statement, but it's a real statement. We all know it. That Jewish fidelity to Jewish tradition and to Jewish community is very much driven by the fact that nobody else will take us in. Avraham, until now, is an outsider. He's the consummate outsider. And he's a very successful outsider. But he himself recognized it. At the end of the road, he says, I'm an outsider. And they say, you're great, you're great. He says, yeah, great, but I'm still an outsider. I want land. Problem is, once he has land, he's not an outsider anymore. What happens if, as now an insider, Yitzchak marries a local girl? Then what? Then he's a complete insider.
They get invited to all the charities.
Complete insider. And you have to remember that who you married then was not about romance, not about love. It wasn't even chiefly about money. It was chiefly about clan relations. And you see it, by the way, say from Malachim. Why did Shlomo marry all those princesses? To create relations with the different nations. Bat Paro, famous. So if Avraham has Yitzhak marry a local girl, what does that mean? That he's now totally tied in within the locals. By having Yitzhak marry a girl from far away and from my own family, that means that his essential ties are away. And he's still an outsider. And as an outsider, he still stands a chance of being able to broadcast a message of the other, which if he's an insider, he can't do. So it seems that that's what he's saying, and that's why he says, Asher Anochi Yoshev Bekirbo. One more chop on this, and we got next to nowhere on this, but hopefully with a little depth, is Avraham says to the slave, These are my conditions. What are the conditions? You got to get a girl from the Alterheim. It's got to be from family. And she's got to be willing to leave and come here sight unseen because Yitzchak can't go there. Right? The slave, in the meantime, goes to Haran and he prays to God to help him out. What's the prayer? Does he say, Hashem, please help Avraham and help me, and please send a girl who comes and says, I'm ready to leave, I'm a member of the family, and I'm ready to leave and go marry Yitzchak. Is that what he says? What does he say in his tefillah?
The girl who brings him water.
The girl brings water and gives water to the camels. That's the girl that you've proven. Ma'inyan Shemitah, it's a lakshon. What does one thing have to do with the other? But the answer is the slave's really smart. What is it that he hears in Avraham's words? And remember, the whole concern about Avraham and Sarah and Avraham and Sarah's life now being replicated by Yitzchak and Rivka by having them both be ki'ilu orphans means that what's Avraham looking for in the next generation? Another Avraham. But Yitzchak is not another Avraham, as evidenced by the fact that Avraham interacts left and right with kings and treaties and religious ceremonies and all this stuff, and Yitzchak's off on his own, meditating in the middle of the desert. So what does Avraham need in order to be able to continue the mission? He needs an Avrahama in the family. An Avrahama who will marry Yitzchak. In other words, if Yitzchak can't be Avraham, then Mrs. Yitzchak has to be Avraham. So what does he tell the slave? I want you to find somebody who will pick up and leave home and come here sight unseen. Does that sound familiar? Sounds like Lech Lecha Mi'artzecha. So the slave says, great, I get it. So how do I test that? I don't come and say, who here is willing to leave sight unseen? I got to do more normal tests. So what does he do? He looks for Avraham. How does he look for Avraham? What does he look for?
Yes.
Hospitality. He comes out and does a hospitality test. And when Rivka comes out and passes the test with flying colors, he immediately pays her for the water. That's the gold. And then when he asks who she is and he finds out, he realizes he was hit the nail on the head. She is exactly who he's looking for, and the only thing left is, will they let her go? And that's the whole speech, which maybe we'll talk about next year, which is the slave's version. Okay?